so you guys grew up on the same unit since 2007. You guys have really served together most of your career, almost all your career, outside of your little time being in the Guard where you're still on active duty. How does that happen, right? On active duty, that's probably unheard of. In the Guard, it's common, right, to grow up with people in the same unit and serve them. How does that happen on active duty? I'm Jesse Mandel, and this is Raven Conversation. And today I'm joined by two aviation professionals, one who probably needs no introduction. If you've ever seen the last name Trakel, you definitely know parents in the Guard, CW3 Jaron Trakel and First Sergeant Sandy Brainerd, both here to talk about kind of their interesting path. You guys have known each other more than 20 years, served together in the same units. Aviation community is real small, so I imagine it's pretty easy, but now they serve together in the Washington Guard. So appreciate you guys coming on and sharing your stories.
Of course.
Yeah. Intro background, and Sandy, we'll start with you.
So my name's Sandy Brainerd. I was born and raised in California, joined the active Army and spent 15 years active, all assigned to JBLM, or Fort Lewis when we first arrived. I don't even remember when it switched to JBLM. And then in 2022, decided to make a shift to stay here in Washington, moved across the runway, from my prior home and then joined the Washington Guard, in aviation with 1168.
You make it sound very easy. You just moved across the runway. Is that literally what you did? You moved from one building down the runway to the other building?
I mean, 1 month I had an office and on one side of the airfield, and then a month later I had an office just about a mile away on the other side of the airfield. So
yeah,
it definitely wasn't easy. There was definitely paperwork and conversations that I had to be held with people, and had to apply for my AGR position, but yeah, sure. Make it sound easy.
And then Jaron, welcome. Finally, your mom finally convinced you to come on the podcast. Intro background on yourself.
So Jaron Trakel, Chief Warrant Officer 3, came over to the Guard in 2019, much like First Sergeant Brainerd, or Sandy, as I like to call him. Joined in 2006. We both went to the same units here on Fort Lewis. And up until 2019, I was enlisted. I made it to E7. And then at that point in time, I decided, I no longer wanted to sit in the back of a helicopter. I wanted to fly them instead. And so, as we'll get into it, but after much deliberation and communications, I made the switch over to the Guard, became a warrant officer. I think it's almost literally 1 mile if you run the airfield from one building to the next. And so, yeah, now I'm over on the other side of the airfield flying 60s, and I am the UH-60 Black Hawk standardization pilot for the state, for, you know, most of the Black Hawks here that we have in the state of Washington.
Yeah. So I'll get to this question after I ask Sandy. How did you learn about the Guard?
So I learned about the Guard when he decided to jump ship from our unit and join the Guard. And around the same time, one of our buddies, Jared Wood, now retired Master Sergeant Wood, did he leave at this close to the same time as you, right?
Yeah, so Jared, he was one of my staff sergeants when I was a platoon sergeant.
Yep.
And he made the 7 list. And the unit that we came from, once you get to the E7 position, there's only so many slots, and there was no slots. And so Jared had to, find a new home, and the Guard was the home. And so I introduced him to First Sergeant Trakel at the time. And he cut his teeth in the Guard. And then when it was my turn to make the move, between, you know, Sergeant Major Trakel at the time and Jared helped me get over. And then now with Sandy coming over. Basically backfilled Jared for lack of better words in the AGR community.
I was reached out to, said, hey, there's nobody to promote into this position right now, and we need a hard charging E6 promotable or E7 that's willing to come over. And I was like, well, you know, I'll ask my guys. And I had actually moved into his position after he left, and was a flight company platoon sergeant. I asked a bunch of my guys, anybody interested in this, and no takers. And then about 6 months later, I reached back out and I said, hey, I'm forced with the idea of a PCS move or finding a different job. What if I told you it was me that wanted to come over? And I took the mile drive around the end of the airfield. I came over, I met a bunch of people within the GSAB. And it had a very similar family feel to it. A lot of people that care about each other. And I made the decision at that point. I was like, yep, I think this would be a good move for me. So, applied, came over, put in my application for the AGR position, and eventually got picked up.
So it all starts with the tracals, which then leads me, when did your mom finally convince you to come to the Guard?
So I was a senior E7. We keep on saying over there. We were both in the 160th. We're at 4th Battalion right across the street. That's where we spent, you know, majority of our young adult lives. And I would arguably say that's the personality and who Sandy and I are today is completely based off that unit. That's how we grew up from. We were both 18 years old when we joined the Army. We met each other in 2007. We were painting curbs over by where the 16th cab is at now, hating our lives. And we have been attached at the hip. Our first combat deployment ever back in 07 was together, everything. So, but I was senior E7 and I think I'm done being enlisted. I'm in my brain. I was like, I don't want to be a first sergeant. I don't want to be in charge of people. Little did I know. So I originally applied for flight school through the active component, but then I came over here randomly on a lunch to meet up with my mom to have lunch with her. And the SAO at the time, Colonel Brewer, was basically like, well, you know, you can come to the Guard and do this too, right? And I was like, huh, whatever, stupid Guard. I'll never do that. And he's like, okay, I guess we're not good enough for you. And that was all it took. That was a challenge. And I was like, oh, you're challenging me. Like in my brain, I was like, oh, you're going to challenge me? Okay, I'm going to do this. So while I was still active duty without making any decisions, I applied for the Guard, came over here when I was still active component. And did the warrant officer board and got accepted and came out, you know, number one in the state at that time. And so at that point in time, it was, all right, here's your piece of paper if you want to come and actually do this. So at that point in time, I got a hold of whoever I could. I think I was the first one from our battalion to ever swap over to the Guard to be a pilot. So it was kind of an unknown thing from enlisted to warrant officer and simultaneously swapping components. So there wasn't really many things in place. So I kind of winged it, for the lack of better words, got a bunch of paperwork done on the Army side. We had a really, really, really good command team at that time. Command Sergeant Major Jimmy Wilson, retired now. He was an absolute humongous force in both me and Sandy's world. And he was so supportive to basically say, like, yes, you can go do this. So he helped with the paperwork pushing all the way up to the regiment to get accepted. And then I left the Army on April 1st and joined the Guard on April 2nd of 2019.
Well, it is your Guard birthday.
Yeah, so it's technically my Guard birthday right now. So, so I came into the Guard as an E7 and then went to walk school. And, so that was about it. I mean, it really wasn't even my mom necessarily. She's told me for years, like, coming to the Guard, it's the same thing. And I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about. You've never been in my shoes. You know, moms know best, like, but you never listen to her.
Yeah.
So,
well, and then Colonel Brewer with the challenge, which is kind of very low key of Dan Brewer, right? He does that. That is what he would do. He was, oh, well, you can't do that anyway. So why would you even try? And then all of a sudden you want to do it.
It was 100% that. And I was like, oh, I'm being challenged by some Colonel. Like, I'm going to take this just challenge. And it's worked out for the best. So, that was really that was the hurdle. And I came over not knowing what position I would be in, what I would do for a job. Went to flight school, came back from flight school in October of 2020. And then from there, went straight on a deployment. And that was really what kickstarted me. I was not prepared for it. I didn't know I was going on a deployment until halfway through flight school. And I was kind of like, hey, you know, you're leaving, right? And I picked Blackhawks because I no longer wanted to go to, I was like, I'm done deploying. And I knew the Chinooks deployed a lot. And next thing I knew, I was
congratulations.
Going to Iraq. And that's what jump started my career, to be honest, is I don't regret that being told that I had to go there. because it helped me with my hours, with my experience, and it helped me get my foot in the door for the AGR community.
Nice. So you guys grew up on the same unit since 2007. You guys have really served together most of your career, almost all your career, outside of your little time being in the Guard where you're still on active duty. How does that happen, right? On active duty, that's probably unheard of. In the Guard, it's common, right, to grow up with people in the same unit and serve them. How does that happen on active duty?
Go ahead, Sandy.
Yeah, so when within the special operations community, so special operations aviation, you get what you call fenced in. So the moves are based off of command selections for moves. And Jaron referred to it earlier, but when you make it to that E7 level, then you kind of start hitting the chopping block and whether there's a position available if they want to retain you. And through that time, neither one of us really asked to move. And we didn't ask to necessarily leave 4th Battalion 160th. So we just stayed there. We both took our turns moving between different companies. We both started in a maintenance company over there, turning wrenches on helicopters, moved to the flight company. And we continually progressed with our trade of being crew members in the back of an aircraft, taking on different positions. I personally got selected and moved into the battalion S3 shop. So I worked S3 for a while. Then I moved on and I became the battalion standardization instructor. So the senior enlisted instructor for the battalion. And we really just ended up staying in that same unit based off of continued performance that we displayed to our leadership. Really kind of luck of the draw at the end of the day, though. It's kind of an anomaly that you have two people that spend an entire career within the Army, and we revolve around each other. If you had told me when I was 18 years old and we first reported to Fort Lewis and we were painting curbs together that 19 years down the road, we'd be sitting here, we'd be in the same exact battalion, but just in the National Guard, I probably would have laughed at you.
Absolutely. Driving Sandy's red Mitsubishi Lancer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I also think, once again, it's wild to think, right, that you've served together since 2007, but you've also, it's only about a mile, not even a mile apart from where you started mm-hmm. to where you're at now. So you've spent your entire time working on the same airfield, which is just insane to me when you hear people like they PCS here, they move across the world or whatever. You guys have had kind of almost the luck of being able to get stabilized in one area, grow up in this area, build families in this area. So it's just kind of phenomenal to me, at least, that it was able to do that from active duty to the Guard. So
yeah, and I'm from here. I grew up in Thurston County since middle school. So, I mean, I originally, when I came in, I was like, I'm going to go see the world. And then I actually came back for a Christmas party. I was on Christmas break in AIT, in Advanced Individual Training, and came to the facility with my mom and saw black helicopters. I saw the first black Chinook and I was like, what is that? And that's where I was like, I want to fly on that. It's different looking. And so I started doing research and put my packet in for the 160th basically. And at that point in time, I got stationed at Fort Lewis and I was like, all right, I guess I'm not going to see the world. I'm going to see my backyard again.
We
still got to see the world in our own capacity.
How many deployments?
I think with 160th, I think I have 21 or 22 deployments.
Okay. Yeah. And I have 19.
Wow.
So the funny thing with Sandy and I is that the very first rotation that we did when we were in flight company, we were supposed to go home at the same time. We're supposed to go home at the exact same time. So if you could picture us back in 2007, helicopters are running. There's like a flight of like three Chinooks. We're all going home. We're excited. We just got off of a long mission that night prior, so we were still awake. We run to our rooms. We all grab our bags and our boxes and everything else because we're ready to go home for a rotation because we know we're going to be back here in like 60 days. And so we're all out there running through rocks, picking stuff up. I'm in the back of the Chinook loading stuff, and I see Sandy running up with his box, and then our platoon sergeant at the time, I think it was Kirk.
It was Kirk.
Walks in front of Sandy and tells him to stop. and tells him he has to stay for an extra 30 days for because something happened back here in the States. And I like looked at Sandy and we like made eye contact, and it was like picturesque. Like the ramp came up and like we took off and then like, bye Sandy. And ever since then, our rotations have been like off cycle for the most part. But I mean, I would think that if I was to put a number on it, Sandy and I probably have about 600 to 700 hours of actual flight time together, of like literally sitting within 3 feet of each other just constantly. So
that's insane. And Sandy, where are you from originally?
From California originally.
Okay. So you're a West Coast guy.
West Coast guy.
Living on the West Coast isn't a big deal to you.
Washington's home now though. Washington's been home since probably 2009-10 when I decided to re-enlist in the Army, and I was like, I like this. I like Washington. And
nice.
Made the nice. Choice to stay here even longer.
So you're both AGRs. Both at the facility. You came in first, Aaron. Talk about going from active duty and getting an AGR job, because I don't think I've actually ever asked that question. Yeah. You know, because we talk about it all the time, where it's like, oh, just go put in an AGR packet. Go put an AGR packet. How easy is it to go from your active duty to, hey, I'm going to put a packet in for the Guard to be an AGR?
Yeah. So obviously coming over to the Guard, what we just talked about that a little bit, I will actually tell you, like, the very first time that I did not get a paycheck on the 15th or the first of the month, I cried. Because it was the first time I've never not gotten paid since 18 years old. And I didn't understand what the Guard was, really. I didn't really prepare myself, like, financially or just mentally, to be like, you're not going to get a paycheck normally. So on the deployment, for me, I realized in the warrant officer community, especially as an aviator, there's very finite amount of positions for the aviation community. I think I counted at one time, there's maybe 7 to 9, I think, in total. I don't remember exactly. So it's a very, very competitive path to go into anyways. So thankfully at that time there was movement on the front. People were going to retire, which, you know, meant a shift. So the entry level job for me as a pilot, is the readiness position, the company readiness. So in a flight company, unlike many other MSCs, out here in the Guard, where it's an enlisted, that is a training officer or the training NCO or the readiness NCO, in the, aviation community, the flight companies, it's a warrant officer. And they are everything. They're the training NCO, they're the readiness, they're all that stuff at once. And so that was kind of the first entrance. So there was a shift in personnel as people moved. And so I kind of started reading the writing on the wall and really started diving into it. And so to me, getting into the AGR community, you have to grind. You have to understand what people's jobs are and what you want to do. So if you want to be the readiness NCO or the readiness officer, you need to start researching. What do they actually do? What systems do you work within? Mm-hmm. How do you gain access to learn more about that? How can you be supportive with that individual that's there right now? And that's where I kind of like started looking at that. How do I get into IPSE? IPSE was just coming online when I was starting to look at this. And so I was in Iraq and I was doing the 40 plus hour block to get IPSE access. And I had no clue of what I was doing. I was just researching things. I was reaching back here to the S1 saying, hey, how do I start to adjust things? And basically what I did is I kind of told the commander and whatnot at that time, like, hey, let me do everybody's redeployment paperwork. Let me kind of get everybody's stuff ready to go. And so that was kind of how I got my foot into the door. So when the AGR hiring board happened, it wasn't necessarily a shoe-in type thing, but I felt very prepared at that point in time. To be able to enter into my interview and say, I'm aware of these systems. I understand how these systems work. I understand what MUP does. I understand what IPSE is. I understand how the G1 does promotions and the enlisted promotion cycles. So all those things is just a research. Getting an AGR position is not an easy thing to do. Nobody should ever think that it's easy. We are a small community, and we're a small community of professionals for a reason. Everybody has not just one job, but usually multiple jobs to do at the same time. So that's kind of how it happened.
Yeah, Sandy, what about for you?
I'll echo kind of that same sentiment that that Jaren laid out there, which is it's that grind, that willingness to put in that extra work to learn the systems, to understand them. I was fortunate to leave the active component and be able to come on into an ADOS paid position and working with the GSAB. But it's that same piece. It's putting yourself out there, learning the systems, volunteering kind of to take on the additional stuff and understand what other people's jobs are and show that you're willing to work with other people and really learn their roles, see how everything interacts and interfaces with each other. I mean, I went in for my AGR hiring board and I was still very nervous and not like I knew that I had put in the time and learned the systems and learned people and how things operated, but I was still very, very concerned with it. You know, but you have to have that healthy respect for nothing is a given position for you. You have to put in the work. You have to put in the time. And honestly, for the majority of the AGR force, I would say you have to realize that that you need to really have that true concern for the soldiers, because the AGR force is very small, and we're there to take care of the entire force with less than what the active component does for that. Actually, I recently kind of got to take a peek behind the curtain and see what that AGR manning force looks like. And it's actually NGB driven, but we're at 55% of the strength that that is basically put onto the sheets for what the authorized AGR force is. So just based off of mobility of any given unit, and we're seeing that right now with the downsize of 80 or the transition for 81st Brigade and the downsize of the force.
Yeah. I mean, when you get that kind of peek behind, be like, whoa, like that's how few we actually have. And then how many we actually have funding for or supposed to have. So,
yeah. So, but it's, at the end of the day, you know, it is that, that willingness to kind of take the extra step for people that are interested in applying for that AGR side, doing the study work, understanding what systems are there, and putting yourself out there. A lot of the people that I've seen come through, and apply for AGR positions, they're doing exactly that. They're reaching out to their readiness and their training NCOs and officers. Hey, can I help you with anything on a drill weekend? Can I make sure that anything goes through? Is there anything extra that's out there that I'm able to kind of take off of your plate? And they're just going in, and what they're actually doing is just learning how those operations actually work and finding those opportunities that are out there to kind of get an upper leg, a leg up on everybody else, but at the same point in time, nothing's a given in that application process.
So for you guys both, and you've kind of both have gone up through the AGR program now in your fourth year and in your seventh year now in the Guard, talk about what you guys do full time, because the requirements are still the same for the M-Day soldier compared to the active duty pilot. So how do you guys both support our traditional force coming in and continuing to meet those standards?
Yeah, so my current job now is I'm a standardization pilot. So I am kind of like the person that runs the program when it comes to instructing and managing flight records, pilots' career records, and whatnot. So a pilot in the Guard. First off, if you ever have interest in joining the Guard to be a pilot. He was on here a month or so ago. Chief Warrant Officer 2, Elijah Cruz, is the hands down best point of contact. But anybody that wears DOTS that is a warrant officer can direct you in the right position and give you some guidance. So don't ever fear talking to a warrant officer. They probably have a coffee cup in their hand. But Elijah Cruz, he is the person to talk to. He's the one that will help guide you paperwork wise. But we have a lot of semi-annual requirements. So every 6 months, every pilot has to fly X amount of hours. And it's the exact same as the active component. There's no difference. And so it's a full-time job in and of itself. So on my AGR side, I'm an instructor pilot at the facility. And so as pilots come back from flight school, I'm one of the first faces that they meet. And they come on orders and they do their progression. So Basically, they come out of flight school after a year and some change, and like their training wheels are still on. They're kind of a very malleable little brain, and then they start the actual flying. So we do a few months of progression with them to get them comfortable in the airspace here, get them comfortable with the aircraft. And then we do some of the more advanced things like sling loads, combat maneuvering flight. We'll put the aircraft in 60-degree banks and stuff like that. Hopefully nobody pukes type thing. So that way there we get them more qualified on the aircraft. And then at that point in time, I provide guidance to the command team, guidance to the facility. On my full-time side, I do a lot of the hoist training that we get to do. So if you get qualified enough and you get selected, you get to fly the aircraft that have hoist on them. So as an AGR, I get to be the first one out the door, which is awesome. So the flood response, we got to go out there, it got activated. I got to go hoist somebody off the top of a truck roof in some water. The fire responses, working with the Seattle Fire Department, Pierce County Fire Department, doing qualifications with them and hoisting them out for any kind of natural disasters. So that's what a lot of my full-time job evolves around, on top of just flying the aircraft, taking care of the pilots, managing their hours, getting them to come in to get qualified and current and more proficient, and then getting them to the next level. So you start as a pilot and then become a pilot in command. And then from there, you start to really branch out and spread your wings. So that's what a lot of my full-time job consists of. And then I deal with a lot of the enlisted as well, with a lot of the decisions for the aircraft. I'm at the, kind of like the primary person that we talk with when it comes to the pilot and the enlisted in the back of the aircraft for our crew members.
Yeah. Sandy, what about you?
So full-time side is an AGR. I'm the battalion S3 NCO, so senior ops NCO for aviation within the GSAB. And really my day-to-day job within that role is direct support to the readiness teams for all of the companies within the GSAB. And we do everything in our shop, from scheduling land, ammo, managing the orders that are being input. We have a part in determining where the funding is going for training throughout the year, making those crucial decision points, providing feedback to the command team of, hey, this is essential training. You know, we need to get these MOSs trained up. We're short on this, or we're over strength on this MOS. We don't really need to put our emphasis on that currently. And really just kind of supporting the M-Day soldiers by supporting their readiness channels, making sure that they have everything that they need. I always consider the S3 to be kind of like the old school telephone operator, where, you know, you have to know exactly what that line you need to connect mm-hmm. it is. So somebody gives you a call, you take it, hold on, switchboard. Yeah, you need to talk to this person, or solving that problem right there on the spot and making sure that everything's taken care of. But we're the ones that, my team, we make sure that training is lined up. We make sure that everything's reserved, the ammo piece, and making sure that when our M-Day soldiers come into a drill, that everything is lined up for them. And there's minimal admin stuff for them to do to make sure that they can get out there and train.
Yeah, it's highly critical because, there's only 2 days of drill. So Everything has to kind of be lined up.
You got to hit the ground running.
19 years ago, would you have sat here and said, man, I'm going to serve 19 years with this guy or this guy and still be in the same spot? What would you have said to yourselves?
Absolutely not. No. We talked about it before we even started this. 19 years ago, I would have never considered myself in this position at all, nor knowing Sandy still. For 19 years, knowing him and being around him, I can walk into a room and if I hear, I know Sandy's in the room. It's like a unwritten noise that is made between us that we've done for 19 years. I don't know why, but it's one of those bonds that you just have with each other.
It was Nick Mueller.
Yeah, Nick Mueller, one of our friends that passed away overseas. It kind of all started back then, and we've carried it. Absolutely not. Would I have ever thought I'd be here today, sitting here with Sandy, doing in the guard for that matter. I was committed to the active duty. I was, but I do not regret my decision one bit. So,
same thing. I never in my wildest dreams, if I had been told 19 years ago, you sitting in the guard with CW3 Tracol and First Sergeant Brainerd, I would have been like, I probably would have laughed. I would have laughed
Right, we were hood rats. We were pretty big hood rats back then.
Yeah, we were.
Yeah, I was a six and done kid when I enlisted. No way would I have said, oh yeah, Lieutenant Colonel. Yeah, sure, let's do that.
Before I joined the Army, I was working on getting ASE certifications. I was going to become a vehicle mechanic. And then I kind of was like, well, you know, what's this Army thing? And I chose big helicopters, and I knew that the 160 was out there. I was like, I'm going to do the best that I can, and I'm going to make it there. I wasn't exactly sure what that path looked like, but I was like, I'm going to make it there. And I got selected right out of AIT. But I think it's for the best that that we both have made it to where we are. I like bringing the mentality of what we were raised with. We still both carry the same exact motto with us. Night Stalkers don't quit. We might not be Night Stalkers anymore, but that mentality is still there. There's nothing that you can put in front of us that will stop us. We're going to find a way to get things done. And I feel like it's great to see that in the pilot standardization community for the aircraft, air crews, all of their training, and then the same thing. There's nothing that's going to stop us. We will make sure that we get our job done at the end of the day.
Yeah. You guys have kind of imparted a lot of wisdom, but any kind of final advice, guidance to anybody watching who's either interested in the Guard, interested in aviation, in the Guard, wanting to move, anything you got on a final kind of touch of wisdoms there?
To me is, you know, whether it's the Guard, if it's the Army, if it's aviation, if it's the 160th SOAR, don't let anybody ever tell you no. You know, you never know if you don't try at the end of the day. And then if you want to be an aviator in the Washington National Guard, you know who to reach out to. Again, you know, the Warren House recruiting exists out there, and Mr. Cruz can help out, and it's a wonderful job. You just got to be ready for it. There's no easy way to say it. It's a full-time job. I don't just do 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year. So, you know, please come over and have some fun.
Yeah. Similar sentiment, there is, you know, the answer is always no, unless you ask. You have to put yourself out there. You have to try. And if you're not seeking challenges, you know, the Guard is a great place to come to seek those challenges, in life, even if it's on the M-Day side. Broadening your perspective on what the Guard is. I didn't know what the Guard was before I decided to make my switch. I did my research and everything, but it was definitely an eye-opening experience. And I, you know, seeing everybody come together and be that shaping force to help their state, their nation, their communities, whether it's responses to wildfires or flooding, there's definitely so much reward in that. So, you know, if you're seeking to be part of a team where you have that interaction with your community, that support for your community and state, the Guard is definitely a great place to come and seek those challenges.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate both your guys' time coming in, talking with us, sharing your experiences, your wisdom, and everything. And it's really cool that you guys have been able to serve together as long as you have been. A lot of my folks that I have enlisted with have now since retired, and I've started to feel like, man, the clock is running out even on myself at some point, it feels like. So, but I appreciate it once again. So if you like the video, give it a like. If you want to know more about aviation, join the community. We'll definitely put Chief Cruz's notes in there. Also, Chief Trakel is always happy to answer any questions if you like about pilots. For future videos, subscribe to the channel, and I appreciate you coming on.
Yes, sir. Thank you.